Certain information set forth in the podcast may contain forward-looking statements under applicable security laws. These statements are not guarantees of future performance, and undue reliance should not be placed on them. Although forward-looking statements contained in this presentation are based upon what management of the company believes to be reasonable assumptions, there can be no assurance that forward-looking statements will prove to be accurate. LifeSci Advisors and the company undertake no obligation to update forward-looking statements in the podcast should circumstances or management's estimates or opinions change. This podcast is for general information purposes only. It is not an offer or solicitation to buy securities and does not constitute investment advice.
First of all, CD40 stimulates macrophages to produce hormones and other substances that actually changes the stroma of the tumors, making it more permeable, which is a good thing. Both more permeable to chemotherapy, but also to T-cell infiltration. And we know that, secondly, that CD40 activates the dendritic cells that is infiltrating the tumor, thereby allowing continued T-cell priming, T-cell recruitment and infiltration, hopefully leading to tumor-directed T-cell immunity in these patients.
Hello, my name is Neil Canavan, and this is Benchtop Bios, a podcast series by LifeSci Partners where we introduce healthcare investors to the people and the pipelines driving the biotech sector forward. My guest today is Dr. Søren Bergenholt. He is the CEO of Alligator Biosciences. Søren, welcome to Benchtop Bios.
Thank you, Neil. It's a pleasure being here.
I would say, so first things first, for the benefit of listeners who may not be familiar with your company, let's get the elevator pitch for Alligator.
Yeah, so Alligator is a Swedish clinical stage biotech company. We are headquartered in Lund in the southern part of Sweden. We focus exclusively on immune oncology with developing agonistic, monoclonal, and multispecific antibodies.
Splendid. I know a lot about immune oncology, so this is going to be easy for me. All right, we're going to get way more on Alligator in just a few minutes, but in the spirit of Benchtop Bios, which is to know senior management, let's talk for a bit about you. And let's begin at the beginning. I realize from your accent, you're not from Texas. Where were you born, sir?
Yeah, I was born in Copenhagen, just on the other side of the water here in Denmark.
Beautiful, beautiful place. I encourage anyone to go. I have been, obviously. So I could tell you my best memories. Tell me your best memory growing up in that place.
Yeah, Copenhagen is a beautiful city, but walking on the lakes in the city on a sunny Sunday morning, that really brings out the best in everybody. So that's one of my favorite childhood memories.
So, all right, looking into the water, the tranquil setting, how is it you came to think about science? I mean, your parents, you played with frogs growing up? Or?
Yeah, I did not. I became, at an early age, interested in physics. And when I went to high school, I thought I was going to be a physicist. But I soon realized that I didn't have a corresponding interest in math. So
that kills the whole thing right there.
It does. And then I think the fallback position was biology. And that's why I graduated high school and moved on into university.
All right. So University of Copenhagen, this institution is founded in the swinging 1470s by Pope Sixtus IV and Christian I. And roughly 517 years later, in 1995, you got a master's degree in biology.
I did.
Yeah, and you focused on T-cell biology, which, let me tell you, at that time was pretty much of a black box. Why did you want to do that?
So I had a course in immunology, and that was new at that time. And we really discussed Th1, Th2. That was just so much new ground being broke at that point in time. And then I summed up all my courage and asked one of the professors whether there was a space for me in his lab. And for some reason, he thought that was a good idea. And I joined his lab. And then it's been immunology ever since.
Wow. He must have been a good mentor to you. Who is this individual?
He's now Professor Emeritus Mogens Classon. He actually published in Nature in 1978 on the so-called Vito cell, which I think we now call a regulatory T cell.
I'll be damned.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very early.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just one more question about the university and your background. Is it anywhere near Christiana? And did you ever go there for purely scientific reasons?
That's a good question. It's somewhere away. It takes an effort to get there. And I'm sure when you've been there for a while and indulged in whatever you can acquire there, that that science becomes so much easier. But no, it's not a place that I went very often.
Well, splendid. You couldn't have, because otherwise you would never have finished your studies.
No.
Well, you did continue on to earn your PhD in 2000, again, focusing on immunology and specifically IBS, which you published on. Then you did a postdoc at the Pasteur looking at adaptive immunity. So from this rather impressive training, you did earn a position at the Danish powerhouse Novo Nordisk. You were there project managing the diabetes franchise. You also published there. But then something happened that sort of puzzles me. You moved into the job of investment manager. So from the bench to the bank, I guess. How did this come about?
Yeah, it came about by a realization that I was probably not going to be a career scientist for my entire life. And at that point in time, joining Novo Nordisk, it also became clear to me that there was a business side of life science that was rather attractive. And then this position internally in Novo Nordisk opened up. And again, I summed up my courage and approached the guys running the investment fund. That was a great experience, got me in touch with a lot of executive management and Novo Nordisk at that point in time, reinforcing that focus on the interface between science and business.
Excellent. After 2 years at Novo, you move on to a company called Symphogen. This is an antibody company, now part of Servier. You wore several hats over an 8-year period. You ended as the COO, head of preclinical and R&D. What size of team are we talking about here?
Well, we were talking about teams from a handful of guys, and I think up to around 60 when I was running the entire preclinical and R&D operations.
And tell me just a bit more about the company, because this does seem to lead into a lot of the work you're doing now.
Yeah, the company was founded on the idea and the wish to really copy nature and not only make monoclonal, but make recombinant polyclonal antibodies. So we were actually make a molecule called 001, which was composed of 25 individual monoclonal antibodies, all manufactured in the same fermentation, a molecule that actually went all the way into a phase 2 study. So that was pretty entrepreneurial and innovative. And then during the latter part of Symphogen's development, we started making antibodies in immune oncology composed of 2 to 3 monoclonal antibodies.
All right, so you did that for 8 years. And 2010, you returned to Novo, which is something that I don't think I've ever seen on a CV. You leaving a company and coming back. Did they make you an offer you couldn't refuse?
Yeah, I think the 8 years at Symphogen had given me what I call my biotech education. So I'm involved in almost all parts of the value chain, from discovery, regulatory affairs, clinical development, project management, what have you. And I think that gave me an opportunity to rejoin Novo Nordisk. I got approached by Lars Fruergaard, who now is the president and CEO. At that time, he was running a corporate development function, including corporate alliance management, and he wanted somebody with insights from the biotech industry. And I still had a significant network within the company, and then things just developed from there.
All right, so quite a while, 8 years altogether. Give me an example of your biggest win, the thing that you like to point to in your CV at Novo.
I think over an 8-year period, I mean, there's a lot of wins internally, externally, most of them, if not all of them, is done as a significant team effort. I think one thing where we really broke new ground was that we, together with the University of Oxford, Sir John Bell from Oxford, and Mads Krogsgaard Thomsen, who is now the CEO of the Novo Nordisk Foundation, the CSO at Novo at that time, we actually established internal research facility at the University of Oxford at the Old Road campus, with the Novo Nordisk scientists being so-called industrial fellows and collaborating closely with the Oxford scientists. Sort of negotiating that, first of all, conceiving the idea, negotiating it internally in Novo Nordisk, externally with Oxford University, and actually see it come to fruition with a brand new building and collaboration ongoing until this day. I mean, that was a fantastic experience.
It seems to me like your network has had a lot to do with your success. And this plays out today in Alligator, I would assume.
It does. I think we all know that. Life science, it's a network game. It's collaboration. You cannot achieve anything on your own. You have to be aware of that, and you have to nurture your network every day.
All right. So after leaving Novo 2018, you bounced around a little bit with a few life science companies in various positions. But I'd like to point to one, which is you are CEO of Macrophage Pharma. I believe this is your first role as CEO. Was that a learning curve, or had you been around industry long enough? It's like, yeah, no problem. I can sit in this chair.
I mean, a little bit of both. My 8 years in Novo added well to the 8 years in Symphogen, giving me what I would call my pharma education, a lot about structure, a lot about processes, keeping things tight. But of course, when you get the desk where all the bugs stop. So of course, yeah. You have to be humble about that. So that was in many ways a learning experience. Not the least because during that period, we all started to work from home. And as the company was located around London and I was living in Denmark, Macrophage Pharma overnight became a virtual company. So that was quite an experience.
Wow. That is a challenge. All right, now let's talk about the present challenge. And this is Alligator. And right up front, I'm going to go down to a scientific challenge. The core of your pipeline is an agonist. First of all, there's not a lot of agonists out there. So an agonist of CD40. This is a molecule that's part of the tumor necrosis superfamily. It's involved in the stimulation of adaptive immunity. You find CD40 receptors on T cells, B cells, antigen-presenting cells like DCs and macrophages. Now, I know a lot about this target. I've been reading about it for years in journal articles. Companies have tried to hit this target. They've not succeeded. So what are the challenges here, and why did you want to steer your company into the headwind of all that?
Yeah, so you're right, Neil, that CD40 and the promise of agonizing CD40 and thereby stimulating the myeloid part of the immune system and subsequently enhancing specific immunity has been around for a long time. The first generation antibodies that were conceived 12, 15 years ago, I mean, they proved the biology in a very nice way, but they were all limited by significant safety issues, being that they stimulated the immune system in a systemic way, leading to significant side effects.
Yeah.
What we and others have done, now we understand the molecular structure of CD40 much better, is that we have now designed second generation CD40 agonist, where we have been very deliberate with identifying the right binding epitope on CD40 so that you don't get what we call super agonism, but you get so-called conditional agonism, meaning that you need to have the agonistic antibody cross-linked through the Fc region. And also by designing the Fc region in the right way, we have achieved with mitazalimab a very nice tolerability and safety profile and also good efficacy.
Yeah, let's talk about that drug, mitazalimab. We're just going to call it Mita. That's easier for me.
Yeah.
You're in phase 2 testing in the setting of pancreatic cancer. The trial's called Optimize 1.
Mm-hmm.
Soren, I mean, challenge 1 CD40, challenge 2, pancreas. Come on. Why did you start with this tumor type?
Well, that's correct. It's important to realize that pancreatic cancer is a horrific disease with a significant unmet medical need. And I think that's one of the key reasons to focus on pancreatic cancer. I mean, we are here to develop drugs for patients that have medical needs. If we look at the biology, pancreatic tumors are characterized by being non-inflamed, so-called cold tumors. They're very dense with a very strong stromal component, so they're very impermeable to both cell infiltration and also chemotherapy. What we know about CD40 biology is that it actually does a number of things when in pancreatic cancer patients. First of all, CD40 stimulates macrophages to produce hormones and other substances that actually changes the stroma of the tumors, making it more permeable, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Both more permeable to chemotherapy, but also to T cell infiltration. And we know that secondly, that CD40 activates the dendritic cells that is infiltrating the tumor, thereby allowing continued T cell priming, T cell recruitment and infiltration, hopefully leading to tumor-directed T cell immunity in these patients.
You just alluded to some data that you did have in hand. There is data from the phase 1, and this convinced you that you're on the right path. Could you just highlight that data just for a moment?
Yeah, basically, the phase 1 trial that was done on mitazalimab showed us, I mean, importantly, the drug is pharmacologically active. We see activation of myeloid cells. We also see subsequent activation of T cells. We see a good pharmacokinetic, and we see a manageable tolerability profile, which is a significant thing with these agonistic antibodies, as per our previous discussion. And finally, we saw good signs of single-agent activity in this all-comers solid tumor phase 1 trial, heavily pre-medicated or heavily pre-treated patients.
So I guess most importantly, did you see any signals for adverse events?
In these trials with agonistic antibodies, yes, there are always adverse events. We did not see very many infusion-related grade 3 or above, signifying for me that in this setting, the drug has a manageable tolerability profile, which we have also confirmed in the first part of the current phase 2 trial, where we tested two dose levels of mitazalimab and were allowed to move forward with the highest dose tested in the phase 2 trial.
I want to ask about the continuation of the trial in just a moment, but first I have to mention, because there's somebody involved here, it's a friend of mine. Alligator is working with University of Pennsylvania, UPenn, and somebody called Greg Beatty, who is not only an expert in pancreas, he's also an expert in IO, and he's an expert in CD40. He trained with Bob Vonderheide there at UPenn. So congratulations for working for a friend of mine.
Greg is a great guy and a great scientist, and it's really great working with him.
He's so cheerful all the time. Yeah. I really love it. Yeah. So the interim look is, let's say everything's positive, you continue to forge ahead. What would a pivotal trial look like in this setting? Strikes me that this drug would be perfect in combination.
Yeah, so it is also tested in combination already now. So the first line treatment in pancreatic cancer, standard of care, is chemotherapy, and the optimized one, as we said, is a phase 2 trial, and we're testing mitazalimab in combination with FOLFIRINOX,
okay,
one of the chemotherapy regimes used in first line patients. If the interim data from this phase 2 trial, which we expect to come out towards the end of this year, if that looked good, I mean, there are several ways we can go with the pivotal program. And first of all, we would have to accelerate and expand the current trial in combination with FOLFIRINOX. We would probably do a smaller but parallel trial with GEMNAB, the other chemo regime used in first-line pancreatic cancer patients. And I think it would also be worthwhile to maybe take a step back into the patients that are currently getting neoadjuvant treatment prior to surgery, those 20% of the patient population that are treated with surgery.
That would be an interesting trial. Just a brief follow-up. Would you give the drugs in sequence or as a bolus combination?
Yeah, so currently the drugs are given a little bit apart to ensure that we can separate any adverse events in the setting. But in a clinical pivotal trial and in a hospital treatment setting, we would, of course, try to get the drugs given together or at least at the same hospital visit.
Got it. Let's again assume that all is going well with the upcoming readouts. Give me your business plan there. Would you forge ahead on your own, or would that be a good time to think about a partner?
It's always a good time to think about a partner when you're a company like Right now, we are pushing ahead with mitazalimab towards proof of concept in the program, building value for Alligator. But sure, when we get to proof of concept and we are going to expand the pivotal program in pancreatic and potentially also expand the indications outside of pancreatic cancer. And when we talk about commercialization, I think the value of mitazalimab would be much greater with a partner who has the capacity to invest much more broadly in the asset than Alligator has today.
You mentioned going into perhaps other tumor types. You have a trial called Optimize 2 with Mita. Is that what that's for?
That's what that's for. So that's until now undisclosed indication. What I can tell you is that here we are trying to hedge some of the biological risk that you alluded to with pancreatic cancer, going into a different tumor type, which is a hot or inflamed tumor type, and also where combination with checkpoint inhibitors is more relevant from a biological point of view.
Got it.
Most likely not a first line, but rather a second line setting for Optimize 2.
All right, let's move on from Beta. The second asset I want to discuss is ATOR-1017. This antibody drug is designed around another notoriously difficult immune-stimulating target. This is 4-1BB. So, Soren, it's sort of the same question. This drug, people have tried to do it, and again, it can be super toxic. So why are you chasing this rainbow?
I would almost say because we can, because we have insight and the technologies to do it. No, as for CD40, the first generation, again, proved to be extremely toxic and programs have been discontinued. What we've done with 1017, as we call it, is again that we have designed in both characteristics about where on 4-1BB the molecule binds and also characteristics in the constant region that again allows us to make a conditional agonist that is only activated in the tumor when you have cross-binding both on 4-1BB and on the Fc gamma receptor.
You do have some data here. It was presented, sadly, virtually at ASCO 2021. What did people see at ASCO?
Yeah, what they saw and what we have also presented at later occurrences is that 1017, first of all, it's safe. it's the same molecule we are dosing up mm-hmm. to 900 milligrams now in the last cohort in the phase one. The drug is pharmacologically active. We see T-cell activation in the patients. We also see another pseudomarker of T-cell activation is soluble 4-1BB, and we see increased levels there in a dose-dependent manner. And finally, we see that the patients are benefiting from this. It's a all-comers solid tumor trial, and we have a disease control rate of 45%, with some of our patients staying on drug for up to a year, which is actually pretty impressive as a single agent in this patient population.
So I want to mention one final thing. This one is a really long name, ALG.APV527. Now, this is still in preclinical, and the reason I bring it up is because this is the result of your platform. And I want to wrap up with a description of that platform, which is really kind of impressive. This drug is a bispecific of 4-1BB, and it's tethered to something called 5T4. This is a known oncofetal protein that people have tried to target before. It's on the presence of many tumor types. So first, what's the rationale for combining this as a bispecific? And then I want you to talk to me about your platform and something called NeoX Prime.
Yeah, so first of all, 527 is a collaboration with our good colleagues from Aptevo in Seattle. As you said, it's a bispecific. Again, we are agonizing 4-1BB on T cells and NK cells to make them even more active and also circumvent T cell exhaustion, which is actually a problem with many checkpoint inhibitors. The rationale for the dual targeting against 5T4 is now, again, we get a molecule that is only active in tumors expressing 5T4, for instance, non-small cell lung cancers and others. So you get activity in the tumor and you secure that by not having 5T4 expressed in other tissues that you target your agonism to the tumor.
It almost works like a prodrug or a switch, I guess.
Probably more like a switch than a prodrug because the drug is not metabolized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Splendid. Okay, now the secret sauce. NeoX Prime, what can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so NeoX Prime, now we go back to CD40 biology. So NeoX Prime is the bispecific concept that we have developed using our other underlying technologies, our antibody libraries, our technologies for antibody optimization, and also our Ruby format, which is our proprietary, easy to manufacture, easy to develop bispecific format. Taking all that technology and then adding all our knowledge with CD40 that we built up over the years, we have developed NeoX Prime. So it's a bispecific antibody that always binds CD40. And then on the other part of the molecule, we can target various so-called tumor-associated antigens. So antigens like 5T4 that we just discussed, EEA mm-hmm. and others that are preferentially expressed on tumors. So what's the whole idea here? The idea is that we again get conditional activation of CD40 in the tumor. And then at the same time, by tethering to the tumor-associated antigen, we now, I would say, spoon-feed tumor material directly to the dendritic cells and the immune system, thereby educating the immune system, the T cell, much more efficaciously on whatever mutations, neoantigens that has arisen within the tumor, thereby, in maybe in layman's term, keeping the T cell immunity or the T cell immune system abreast of the tumor status and the mutational status at all times, thereby expanding T cell activity to other specificities and at the same time activating the ongoing T cell immunity. So giving a tumor specific, very efficacious and safe activation of T cells.
Okay. Well, to hear a CEO describe their platform, it always sounds miraculous.
Yeah.
But then if you go into partnerships, that you've attracted some other companies to this platform. Could you just give me highlights of a few companies you're working with?
We already mentioned Aptevo, specifically on NeoX Prime. We are working with another US company called MacroGenix, where we are co-developing a new NeoX Prime molecule. And on a little bit broader discovery collaboration, we are working with a Finnish oncology-focused company called Orion, where we use Alligator's technology platforms to develop novel bispecific antibodies for immune oncology.
Splendid. All right, now I'm going to have two quick questions to wrap up. The first is for the lawyers, and the second is for the bankers. So there's a lot of innovation going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the IP?
So the IP is well distributed across our technologies and platforms, and then we have composition of matter IP on our individual molecules. So we have a broad and deep patent portfolio.
Has any of the assets or technologies been brought in or licensed or anything?
Yes. Tezepelumab was originally developed with Cambridge Antibody Technologies platform back in the early 2000s, 2008, I think, where that was what we all used.
Okay. And finally, for the bankers, we have to talk about money. You always have to talk about money, especially now money's tight. So without a specific amount, could you give me an idea of your current runway and what sort of conversations you might want to be having in the near future with investors? Maybe even here in New York so we can meet.
Maybe even in New York, yeah. Alligator has a runway well into 2023. And how are we going to improve on that? We are in various advanced and structured discussions with potential partners. We already discussed partners just recently. We expect more to come during the second half of this year. And then we are also in the process of talking to existing and new investors on further financing during very late 2022, early 23.
Excellent. Well, I hope to meet you in my hometown fairly soon if I can. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a wrap. My guest today has been Dr. Søren Bregenholt. He is the CEO of Alligator Biosciences. Søren, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Neil. That was really a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this week's Benchtop Bios. I hope that this episode will serve as yet another data point to guide you in your investment strategies. If you wish to hear more of Life Science Benchtop Bios, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Google. Also, if there's a company or a particular executive you'd like to get to know, I do take requests. Please send those to ncanavan@lifesciadvisors.com. Until next week then, goodbye, or for that matter, good sell, whatever boosts your portfolio.